Morning, everyone.
Morning.
How are we doing today?
Good.
Oh, wow, well, that was good. You guys are ready to go. Good job, Mr. Bree. Okay, well, you can open up to the book of Daniel. I want to say something nice about Kendall since he's not here, but I studied with Kendall for a couple years, and he's one of the smarter guys I've ever met in my life. And if you ever actually get a chance to sit down and talk to him, I mean, he doesn't say a whole lot. Sometimes it's kind of even hard to hear him, but man, there's a lot up in his head. So he's obviously working through a theme in the Bible question. Have we noticed what the theme is yet? Pay attention, because there's a theme, and he does this on purpose. And then he was going to be gone today, and he always makes sure that the Bible question isn't something that's like crazy hard to find when he's gone, because he doesn't want to put whoever's filling in for him, you know, on the spot. So he's able to find his theme, keep it a question that a lot of us probably found without even having to look it up, right? And then it's in the context of what? The resurrection. Like, I just want to make sure you guys, if you didn't notice those three things, he is very good. So I really appreciate that, because it's more than just finding the answer that matches the criteria. Like, there's a lot of thought that's going in behind these questions. So you can tell him I said nice things, too, when he comes back. Okay, Daniel, we'll do a little bit of a recap here. Boy, I don't know if I should do this, but I guess I will. You guys are going to help, right? I think, so, Nezer, two Z's. And then I wrote that way too big, but. So we're going to do a little bit of overlap here, because then we have Belshazzar, two Z's. Okay. So we're kind of, because Nebuchadnezzar was before Belshazzar, who was before, who's my last one? Darius, good job. And we'll make him a different color because Darius was the Medo king, right? And then Nebi and Belshazzar were Babylonian kings. And so then as we go through the book of Daniel, we're going to first go through chapters 1 through 4, then we're going to jump to 7 and 8, then we'll cover chapter 5, and here's where like the split occurs, right? And then we'll cover chapter 6. We already did 7 and 8, so then we go back to 9 through 12, okay? And if this, you know, this is important because the book of Daniel is not chronological. So how are you going to unpackage that? You know, I got kids in the school who you can give them 1 through 4, 7, 8, 5, 6, 9 through 12, and they just see numbers and they're like, got it. You know, I had one student come to school on Friday with two of their seven verses memorized. Sat down and their desk flag goes up 5 minutes later, quoted the whole thing. I'm like, I don't know how you do that. Then there's people like me who need help, right? Pictures, memories, and illustrations, something to help me remember. So it's important to know the order that Daniel goes in, because if you don't and you're reading and trying to understand Daniel, you're going to be all over the place and you're going to be very confused. So maybe the easy way to remember it is numerically, 1 through 12, just take 7 and 8. So now that saves you from only having to remember two numbers, right? Just take 7 and 8 and put them after 1 through 4. And then the rest is just filling in numerically, okay? So that'll help. Now, we're able to know this order here based on the empire, the emperors who are ruling. So you'll be in... you know, the book of Daniel, and it'll be talking about Nebuchadnezzar, and then all of a sudden it'll be talking about Darius. And then you'll flip the page, and then it'll be talking about Belshazzar. And then you'll flip the page, and then it'll be talking about Nebuchadnezzar. And on the timeline, we're jumping all over the place, right? You even think about it this way. If you were trying to study American history, let's say even from 1776 to the present, and you were reading a book, and then you were in the year 2000, and then all of a sudden you were in the 1800s, and all of a sudden you were in the... That would be very difficult. All right, so that's helpful. So I wanted to put this up here. We covered this last week. Hopefully you guys can see that. Some review stuff here. So we are studying the book of Daniel. Daniel was a part of a group of Israelites who were taken into Babylonian captivity in the first wave. Okay, he would serve under three rulers. Cyrus is going to show up here at the end of the chapter. But Darius and Cyrus co-ruled together. And Darius's reign actually outlived the reign of Cyrus. But we will talk about Cyrus some. But Daniel lived under two empires, the Babylonian and the Medo-Persian Empire, and served three different emperors. The book of Daniel itself is highly predictive. So we have books like Psalms and Isaiah that are highly prophetic, and they're highly messianic in their prophecies. Daniel, second only to the book of Revelation, maybe Zechariah, if you want to put up a good fight, is very predictive in its symbolism. So it's prophetic utterances that are symbolic. Almost half of the verses in Daniel are symbolic. Okay, so that's a very unique thing about Daniel. You know, you're reading Esther, and Esther's not very super symbolic. It's a story, right? Daniel's very different. There's stories in here, but half of what you're reading are prophecies symbolizing things that would take place in the future. So, all right, that's what I have for review. Let's jump on in here to Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. Starts off by saying, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. So you have Judean kings ruling, and you have this drawn-out process of Babylon coming in and capturing Israelites and taking them back into Babylonian captivity. And when we read through 2 Kings and Chronicles, we see that that takes place in three major waves. So what we're reading here in the third reign of King Jehoiakim, when Nebuchadnezzar comes to Babylon, that would be the first wave of captives that were taken back to Babylon. And when we read on here, and we will, but I want to cover some stuff in 2 Kings first, this is the wave where Daniel and his buddies are taken to Babylon. So there's three waves of captives that go from Judah to Babylon. This is a reference to the first one, and we're able to do that based on the year of the king's rule. So if you want to figure out how to figure those things out and you're reading your Old Testament, we're looking at the king. That's why this stuff's important, why I kind of gave us a mini history lesson last week. If you can know who's the emperor at that time, and what year they are in their reign, you can take that information and then go to Chronicles and go to Ezekiel and to these other places in the Old Testament, and you can really start to narrow down where this is at chronologically. Okay, so three waves of Israelites go into Babylonian captivity. Right here, verse 1, in the third year of the reign of King Jehoiakim, Nebuchadnezzar comes and besieges Jerusalem. That's the first wave taken. All right. There's a second wave. We'll read about that. And then the third and final wave is when the Babylonians actually go to Jerusalem and then they just destroy everything and they actually burn the temple down. They destroy the temple. And that's the final wave. So if we go to 2 Kings, I want chapter 24, but I'm going to start in chapter 23. Second Kings chapter 23, verse 36, says Jehoiakim, so here's our king in Daniel chapter 1, right? Same guy? Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he became king. And he reigned 11 years. So we have to remember Jehoiakim and an 11-year reign. All right? Jump down to chapter 24. In his days, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up and Jehoiakim because of his servant for 3 years. Then he turned and rebelled against him. This is what we're reading about in Daniel, right? The Lord sent him against the band of Chaldeans, bands of Arameans, bands of Moabites, band of Ammonites. So he sent them against Judah to destroy it according to the word of the Lord, which he had spoken to his servant the prophet. Surely at the command of the Lord, it came upon Judah to remove them from his sight because of the sins of Manasseh, according to all that he had done. And also for the innocent blood he had shed, for he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, and the Lord would not forgive. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim and all that he did are not written in the book of the Chronicles in the kings of Judah. So Jehoiakim slept with his fathers, and Jehoiachin, his son, became king in his place. The king of Egypt did not come out of the land again, for the king of Babylon had taken all that belonged to the king of Egypt from the brook of Egypt to the river Euphrates. So we established a date of 605 BC when this first wave of captives go into Babylon. And that's when Daniel and the gang come. Right? If Jehoiakim reigned 11 years, and it was in the third year of his reign, how many years was it from when Nebuchadnezzar came until the end of his rule is? How many years is that? It's 8 years, okay? So then, if we have 605, remember we're going backwards, right? What's 8 years later? You have 597, which is conveniently our second date for our second wave of captives who are going into Babylon. Do you guys see that? So, actually I have this written down somewhere, but your first wave, Jehoiakim, your second wave, Jehoiachin, your third wave, Zedekiah. And that's how you can remember that. But 2 Kings 24 is great because you get all three waves in one. So I want you guys to see this. So in the beginning of chapter 24, we see what Daniel was talking about. Then the third year of his reign, the first wave were taken. Okay? We see that the 8 years matches perfectly with the date we have of 597. That's how we get the date. Okay? So now we're in verse 8 of chapter 24. Jehoiachin, his son, is ruling. He was 18 years old when he became king. He reigned 3 months in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Nehushta, the daughter of Elnathan of Jerusalem. He did evil in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father did. At that time, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, went up to Jerusalem, the city, and came under siege. Here's the second wave, right? Now, for the sake of time, you jump ahead to verse 14. Well, no. Hold on. No. Verse 12, this will be important later. Jehoiachin, the king of Judah, went out to the king of Babylon, he and his mother and his servants and his captives and officials. So the king of Babylon took him captive in the 8th year of his reign. He carried out all the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house and cut in pieces all the vessels of gold which Solomon, the king of Israel, had made in the temple of the Lord, just as the Lord had said. Then he led away into exile, second wave, all Jerusalem, all the captains, all the mighty men of valor, 10,000 captives, and all the craftsmen and the smiths. None remained except the poorest people of the land. There's your second wave. So when we read about the 10,000 that were specifically taken into captivity, they were a part of the second wave, not the first. Daniel's a part of the first wave. Okay? I don't have chapter titles. What is the title of chapter 25 in 2 Kings for you guys? Nebuchadnezzar besieges Jerusalem. Okay, what is the chapter title above chapter 26? Because the story ends. Because that's the last wave. Do you see that? Chapter 25 is Nebi comes back and he burns it to the ground. Okay, that's the third wave. So maybe, you know, and if I'm you, I'd just make these notes in my Bible. Okay? First wave of captives taken into Babylon, you could just, the beginning, you know, the first verse of chapter 24. But remember Jehoiakim. Second wave taken in under the reign of Jehoiachin, where the 10,000 are taken. What is the third wave? in chapter 25, when he just comes and destroys everything that's left and takes the rest of the poor people with him. Okay? So, a little bit of a history lesson there, but it is it does relate to Daniel because it helps us understand a little more when Daniel came. So, back to Daniel chapter 1. All right. So, third year, the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. We just read that story. He's bringing the first wave of people back, and he's going to have Daniel with him. Verse 2. The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he brought them into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. So let's break some of this down. We won't, you know, in Daniel, we won't have to break a lot of this stuff down all the time. But, you know, I'm kind of assuming that a lot of us are going to be like, what's a Chaldean? And who's Shinar? And what's an Aphinet? You know, so I want to make sure that we define our terms so that we understand what's going on here. So the Lord gives Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into Nebuchadnezzar's hand, along with some of the vessels of the house of God. That's interesting. Do you guys remember last week's class and a part of the message? Isaiah predicted that this would happen. Okay? Let's actually go back to Isaiah 39 for those of us who weren't here. So the message last week ended in the end of Isaiah chapter 37. Because Hezekiah prays to God to deliver them, God answers that prayer for the sake of his servant David. And he destroys all 185,000 foot soldiers on the perimeter of the wall. And they're all dead in one night. Wouldn't that be a sight? Yeah. Does God give us victory over our enemies? Maybe something a little greater than 185,000 dead people outside our gate, like maybe Satan bound and nobody can touch us. Like, there's a pretty big picture there, okay? So then in chapter 38, Hezekiah gets sick. God heals him. And then in chapter 39, it says, at that time, Merodach-Baladan, son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he had heard that he had been sick and had recovered. Okay, so Hezekiah gets sick, gets better. The king of Babylon sends a letter with some messengers to Hezekiah. Verse 2, Hezekiah was pleased and showed them all his treasures, silver, the gold, spices, the precious oil, the whole armory, and all that was found in his treasuries. There was nothing in his house nor in all his dominion that Hezekiah did not show them. So does not specifically say that he showed the messengers the gold of the temple, I want us to see. But what's interesting is these messengers show up, and he's like, hey, let me show you everything I have, you know, including the armory? Whoops. That might be a mistake. So then in verse 5, Isaiah says to Hezekiah, oh, hold on, let's back up here. Verse 3, Isaiah the prophet comes to Hezekiah and said, what did these men say, and where have they come to you from? Hezekiah said, they've come to me from a far country, from Babylon. And he said, what have they seen in your house? Hezekiah answered, they've seen all that's in my house. Oops, including the armory, right? So then in verse 5, Isaiah says to Hezekiah, hear the word of the Lord. So God prophesies, and he says, behold, days are coming when all that's in your house and all that your fathers have laid up in store to this day will be carried to Babylon. Nothing will be left, says the Lord. So there's how we know. There's the prophecy of all things, including the things that the people had saved up for the temple. Okay? So God predicted that not only would Judah go down at the hands of the Babylonians, but that they would take everything. All right? And we saw that in 2 Kings when we were reading there. You guys can go back to Daniel chapter 1. So we read in 2 Kings right? Where he says, because I skipped ahead and I said, wait, let's go back and read this verse, where they come under the reign of Jehoiachin, right? And they take all of the articles and stuff and of gold from the temple. So there's its fulfillment. And Daniel, the verse we read in verse 2, is a reference to the fact that when Nebuchadnezzar came and besieged it, he's constantly taking all of the gold and the stuff out of the temple. Okay? So then we get back to Daniel. Now Babylon has all of the gold that was used for the temple construction, right? So then you go to Daniel chapter 5. Daniel chapter 5, verse 1 says Belshazzar, right? So now we've shifted ahead in the timeline to now we're under the rule of Belshazzar. And the end of chapter 5 is the collapse of the empire, but we'll study that. So verse 1 says, Belshazzar, the king, had a great feast for thousands of his nobles. And he was drinking wine in the presence of the thousand. And quite the party here. Belshazzar tasted the wine. He gave orders to bring the gold and silver vessels, which Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken out of the temple, which was in Jerusalem. So the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines might drink from them. Just wanted you to notice that. We'll study this out. So Hezekiah shows up everything. God's like, they're going to take it. You read 2 Kings and they take it. Okay. Then you shift a little forward in the timeline here in Daniel, and the king is having quite a feast. So he pulls out the good stuff, right? And he goes and gets those gold vessels that they had taken from the Israelite temple, and they're drinking out of them, right? So, if you guys go back to Ezra, this part isn't as important, but there's still it's still pretty cool. Right? I think it's cool. Ezra, so right, we're going back in the Old Testament now, but we're going forward in time. See, this is why it's really important that you know who your emperors are. It helps you understand. We didn't go back in time because we flipped back in the Old Testament. Ezra chapter 1, verse 7 says, King Cyrus brought out the articles of the house of the Lord, which Nebuchadnezzar had carried away from Jerusalem and put in the house of his gods. And that's what Daniel says, right? Nebuchadnezzar says he took it and put it in the house of his gods. Cyrus, king of Persia, had them brought out by the hand of Mithridath, the treasurer, and he counted them out, Sheshbazzar, the prince of Judah. And he gives them back, right? And Ezra, you know, Ezra, Nehemiah, these guys like Zerubbabel, they're the time, historically, when the people are leaving Babylonian captivity and are returning back to Israel and are rebuilding the temple. And then they give them all the stuff back. Right? So I just wanted to take a quick second there to kind of follow the trail of the money, or I mean the trail of the gold vessels, you know, because one part of it is going to be in the context of Daniel later in chapter 5, and it's really, really cool how it kind of works out there. But, okay, so what's the significance that the Israelites get their they get their gold things back when they go back to Jerusalem to put back in their temple? Hey, I'm just saying, God's in control. Okay, and that's all I want you guys to see from that last part there. Like, guys, the Lord is in control, right? He's got a plan. He knows these things are going to happen. He's just asking the people to have faith. And that's why when Daniel and the gang and these 10,000 come in the second wave, the reason why this captivity is so unique from their previous captivities is God told them to go into captivity willingly and then provided for them, right? He did not do that during the Assyrian conquest, right? He did not tell the captives, the small amount of remnant of captives that went into Assyria, go and build houses and plant gardens and have families. He did not tell them that. He told that to the Babylonian captives because he knew that they would get back to Jerusalem and they would rebuild. But he also makes sure that the gold goes with them. God sees the big picture a lot better than we do, right? So we want to lean and trust on him. Okay. Let's get back to Daniel here. Verse 2, so The Lord gives the king Jehoiakim into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar, along with the vessels of the house of God. We covered that. And he brought them into the land of Shinar. What's Shinar? What'd you say, Kevin? Babylon, right? That's the geographic region where the empire was, where the Babylonian empire was. The region of Shinar is mentioned 8 times in the Old Testament and usually in reference to Babylon. Okay? If you guys go back to Genesis chapter 10, this is great because when you study this stuff out, you'll notice these other things when you're reading through your Bible again. Genesis chapter 10, look, we're just going to grab verse 10. It says, the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, right? That's the beginning of the Babylonian kingdom, right? And Erech and Akkad and Calna in the land of Shinar. So Babel has always been associated geographically with Shinar from the beginning. Now, this is probably worth noting. Not that any one of you would. But when we talk about Babylon in the context of Daniel, we are referring to a Neo-Babylonian empire. What does that mean? What does Neo mean? New Babylon. Because I just showed you in Genesis the origins of Babylon, right? So if you start going like, who was the first king of Babylon? Are you going to get Nebuchadnezzar? Nebuchadnezzar wasn't even the first king of Neo-Babylonia. Did you guys know that? His name was, well, why do I do this? Nabopolassar? Okay. When you read about the Babylonians going down into Egypt and destroying the Egyptians, that was Nabopolassar. Okay? When you read about the Babylonians going into Judah and pulling Judean captives out, that's Nebuchadnezzar. Right? So I'm just saying, look, this Babylon, this thing's old. Okay? And it goes back to Genesis. And it's got all kinds of kings. And then you've got co-regent kings. And then you got people who say they're kings, but they weren't really kings and they observed a different king. And if you've ever tried to sort out the kings of Babylon, you're going to find hundreds. Okay? And you're like, wow, how? Mr. Tool said, no, it goes Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, Darius. And that is it, right? This goes back to Genesis. But when you go back to Genesis, from the very beginning, Babylon has always been geographically associated with Shinar. So, you know, when you're reading the Old Testament, they're going to have, like Israel is called Ephraim, right? Israel is also called Israel. Israel is also called Samaria, right? It's like, well, what's the difference? You have geography, you have cities, you have clans, you have all sorts of things. So it's good for us to define our terms here. Now, this I thought was interesting. Shinar is the Strong's word, H8152. And it means country of two rivers. Any guesses what the two rivers are? Tigris and the Euphrates. Okay, that's modern day eastern Iraq today. Okay, but that tells you where Shinar is. It's a geographic location. Because, and I'm probably going to get to this today, but the Babylonians are also called Chaldeans. Has your head exploded yet? What are they? Are they Shinar? Are they Babylon? Or are they Chaldea? Right? So it's just good to define our terms here so we understand. I will unfry your brain in a second here on the Chaldea thing. All right? So the Tigris and the Euphrates, that's what the word, the word Shinar actually means. I know nothing about Hebrew. That's why I give you the strong word, and then you go study it. Okay? But it means the country of the two rivers. So the vessels are taken to Shinar into the house of the Babylonian gods, Daniel says in chapter 1. So, Marduk was the chief patron god of the Babylonians. There's obviously thousands. They kind of had it whittled down to about 9 or 10 that were kind of their chief gods. And you're going to be introduced to a lot of these gods in this chapter. Because is there an accident? His name is Nebuchadnezzar. I think that's an accident. Nebo, Babylonian god. Think there's an accident that his name's Belshazzar? Bel, Babylonian god, which just in their language means Lord, which is the same thing. What word means Lord? Baal. It's all the same thing, guys. They're all worshiping the false god, and they're just calling him God. They're just calling him Lord in their native tongue. Baal is the same thing as Baal. Okay? So you're pretty familiar with that term Baal from reading in your Old Testament. So, okay, back to Daniel here. So he takes the people, and then he takes the articles of the house of God, puts them into the treasury of his gods. And then in verse 3, it says, the king ordered Ashpenaz, the king of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and of the nobles. Let's stop there, because at least for reading. Okay, so he's got this guy. This guy's name is Ashpenaz, and he is chief of the officials. And he asks this guy to go get some of these Israelites and bring some from the royal family and the nobles. Okay, let's go. Actually, we keep reading on here. Specifically youths, whom there's no defect, good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, who had the ability for serving in the king's court, and he ordered them to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. Okay? So here's the next thing that's happening here in Daniel, right? This is when Daniel's going to be introduced into the story, because the king says, Ashpenaz, go get some people and make sure that they're smart, and good-looking, they're royalty, so that they can serve in my court. Okay? Let's start to break this down. There is quite a bit of debate on the translation of this word official. Have you guys ever heard that before or noticed that? Okay. Ashpenaz is the chief of officials. Okay. That is the Strong's word, H5631. Okay. Now, before I go into the detail here, I want to show you how they struggle to translate this word. And the book of Esther is the best way to do this. So let's go to Esther. Esther, Job, Psalms, Proverbs. Okay. Esther, we're going to be in, I want to say chapter 1. Nope, chapter 2. Okay, here we go. Esther chapter 2, verse 3. Let the king appoint overseers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather every beautiful young virgin to the citadel of Susa, to the harem in the custody of Haggai, the king's eunuch, who is in charge of the women, and let their cosmetics be given them. When it says Haggai, the king's eunuch, this is the same Hebrew word that's used in Daniel. Daniel says that Ashpenaz is an official. That same Hebrew word, the NASB translators are saying, can also be translated eunuch. Now, the reason for that is there is a root word, a part that makes that Hebrew word, that means to castrate. Okay? The problem is, and this is quite often in translation, the root word is not used in common language. So that I'll just stop there. But that happens. It happens in English, too, where the root word that makes the word is not a common word that's used in the language. So, okay, Esther chapter 2 says this word should be translated eunuch. Now we go to verse 21, same chapter. In those days, while Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthan and Teresh, two of the king's officials from those who guarded the door, became angry and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. That's the same Hebrew word, but this time it's translated official. So that's why Esther's a great example of this word. Like, they go both ways. In one verse we read where it's translated eunuch, then, a few verses later, they translate it official. My best guess probably depends on what job you had. Okay? in the first instance, these guys' job were to go get all the pretty ladies. And the translators are like, the king made them eunuchs. And then in the second example, they were guarders of the door. Do you have to be a eunuch to guard the door? Probably not. So when we make our way back to Daniel here, what I'm just showing us, I don't think you can say definitively one way or the other, because I just showed you an example where the word literally can be translated both ways. I think context is what the translators are doing. I think it depends on your job. I think it depends. Okay, a lot of people in Daniel chapter, a lot of people suggest that Daniel and his buddies brought in were all eunuchs. And the reason why the majority of people believe that is because that was pretty common culturally. If you were brought in into the king's court like that, like the last thing he needed was you being in the way. Okay, he needed you just to do your job. And the quickest way to do that was to make them all eunuchs. All right? So you can see how that word goes both ways. I just giving you guys some information. The Rotherhams translates that word eunuch. And then as the Rotherhams does, is consistent with that all the way through. This last one you guys are really going to like. The King James in Daniel translates it eunuch. Okay? But then you go back to Esther, and it calls the people in charge of getting all the ladies chamberlains, which is an official. So I'm just showing you, I don't think you can say for sure one way or the other if Daniel and these guys were or weren't eunuchs. I wanted you to show you the reason behind the debate for that word there and how it's used. Isn't that interesting? So we have the Rotherhams that always translates it eunuch. And then we go to a story in Esther where it makes a lot of sense they're called eunuchs because they're in charge of getting the pretty girls. But it's in that context that the King James then changes and calls them chamberlains. So I guess you either have to be okay with the fact that you can't prove one way or the other if these guys were eunuchs, or you have to now devote the next 20 years of your life to studying Hebrew, and then you get back to me. Because these guys, there's not a lot of unity on how this word is used. So if thoughts or comments on any of that, is that a scary topic to comment on? You guys? Hey, let's see what we can finish with here. If we get back to Daniel chapter 1, let's introduce the rest of this section. So the king orders Aspenaz, his chief of his officials, okay, to bring in royals. Verse 4, youths, no defect, who are good-looking, showing intelligence, every branch of wisdom, endowed with wisdom and discerning knowledge, who had the ability for serving in the king's court, and he ordered them to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. So let's finish with Chaldeans this morning. What's a Chaldean? Anybody? Any guesses here? Yeah, a Babylonian. I did my best here. I'm open for comments. You guys have a better way of explaining this. Chaldea is a term relating more to the ethnic group of people, where Babylon is a broader term referring to the entire civilization. Okay? Because you'll read the band of the Chaldeans. Even God's people came from the Chaldees area. You remember the name Ur of the Chaldees. Like, this is a very ancient people. But they settled primarily in the region of the Babylonian Empire. And although lots of different ethnic groups and regions comprised the Babylonian Empire, the Chaldean people were the primary comprisers of the Babylonian Empire, if that makes sense. So that's why he says, he doesn't say, like we wouldn't say, hey, bring in these people and teach them the language of America. We would say, teach them English, right? He brings these people and he's like, teach them the language of the Babylonian. It's like, there's like 100 languages spoken in Babylonia. How would you, which one? Babylon is a reference to the civilization as a whole. Okay, the Chaldean people had a culture and a language and an education, right? And it was prominent throughout the Babylonian Empire. So that's why he references Chaldea that way. Okay, I even went as far as to say, You could even say Chaldeans were Babylonians, but not all Babylonians were Chaldeans. That's supposed to help. Did that hurt? Did that make it worse? Okay. Yeah. Guys, I'm out of time. Yes, that is another example. Okay. All Texans are Americans, but not all Americans are Texans. Okay. It's a little bit of a breakdown because Texan culture is very similar to American culture because we're Americans. You know, back in this day, you have so many different ethnic groups separated by technology and travel and distance that they literally were just a different people, right? Yeah. Okay. That's a great place to stop. It's not my goal to fry your brain, but what's good is now you've got Shinar and Chaldea and Babylon, and we're going to get into the names of these guys. You know, you hear this stuff a couple times, you figure out who these emperors are, and it's really good, because then when you go through the rest of your Bible, you'll understand these things. So I wanted to cover some of those definitions and some of the history there on some of those words. So thanks for your attention this morning, guys.